Welcome to the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast. It is the last episode of 2018 for us. So we're going to be looking back. Isn't that right, Dan?
This is correct. We are doing our top five, not dead or alive, but our top five moments of 2019.
No, 2018.
Yes.
You're already looking ahead to the future, but we are going to look back at the year. And we both have a top five list that we're going to get into. And we have also other cool things that we're going to look back at the year that was, including a really epic bikepacking trip by...
Yeah, this, if you weren't following along, Robin and...
Two friends
went from Calgary to Port Renfrew, which is on the west coast of the west coast on Vancouver Island.
And this was a cool trip because it was his way of like doing a tune-up before the Worlds in Innsbruck. And so he just thought he'd go for a big bike ride.
Now, as somebody who has stuck to panniers this whole time, Matthew.
That's me. I stick with panniers. Yeah.
Are you upset that he went bikepacking and not touring?
He did load up pretty good, though. He was loaded.
He was loaded.
So, you know, I'll give him that. But it'll always just be touring to me. But that's a debate for another day. Another cool ride we have featured is contributor Melanie Chambers got a last minute invite to the Taiwan KOM Challenge, which she did in October. And we're going to hear the story of that. And also,
from following her blog, it looked like she did most of her training in Toronto here.
There's some Toronto. I think she went out east for a bit.
Listeners might be shocked to know, not a ton of alpine meters in Toronto.
No, it's really hard to clock in more than 1,000 meters within the city limits in one ride. But there you go. That was a big challenge. And also, we are going to have a segment that we're going to, I think, continue in the new year called Ask a Coach, and our coach is Peter Glassford, frequent contributor to the magazine. So let's get on with the show. Philippe Tremblay, web editor, welcome.
How's it going, Matt?
It's going well. Earlier this year, you spoke with Rob Britton. He's a pro cyclist on Rally Pro Cycling, and he's also a very good climber from Regina, from one of the flattest parts of the country. But what was the occasion for your chat with Rob?
So before the World Championships, Rob Britton rode from Calgary all the way to Port Renfrew with a couple of friends and his bike fully loaded. It was not a conventional training camp by any means. It was an idea that had come to him during the summer, and he got some advice from a pretty knowledgeable fellow, Svein Tuft, who started cycling in part just to get out into the wilderness. And now it's becoming something that's pretty in vogue in pro cycling. You've got guys in Europe doing trips.
Yeah. It seems very much the story of 2018, like from the no-go tour that was Connor Dunn and Larry Warbass just going out and doing some big... I guess bikepacking, but they weren't as loaded as Rob and his two friends, if I understand correctly.
No, they did it right out. They were riding over the Rockies. There aren't a lot of towns out there. They did have tents. They didn't use them every night. Some nights they decided maybe a hotel room would be a little bit more comfortable, but they were on some back roads and it took them 9 days. They were by no means going fast. It was a long 9-day grind, and the training that he got from that seems to have paid off because he rode for about 200 kilometers in the breakaway at Worlds, which not only was a great ride for him personally, but for Team Canada, it meant that they could relax and leave Mike Woods just chilling out in the pack.
Yeah, it set up Mike Woods quite well. So you spoke to Rob Britton, and then you also spoke to Svein Tuft, and I believe Mr. Tuft was at home when you spoke with him.
So he's been a busy guy since the end of his season, and he was back home in BC, and he was finally back in Andorra, where he lives full-time with his young family. And it was a busy day in there. His young son, Gunnar, was a little active in the background there. He also has a dog who chimed in a bit while Svein was giving me some really interesting background on his history of packing and going off on his bike, and the increasingly growing trend of doing that as a mode to freshen things up as a professional cyclist.
Right on. Well, let's hear from Rob Britton, Swain Tuft, and some of Swain Tuft's family.
I'm Rob Britton. I race professionally for Rally Cycling, and I live in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Like, normally that would have been something I just sort of made fun of. I'm like, these guys are, like, idiots. Like, why would you do that? But, you know, it was, I just kind of like woke up, and, like, I started, like, seeing this, like, backcountry stuff, and, like, I've always loved riding my cross bike on mountain bike trails and taking on dirt roads and not road riding, like, if the opportunity, like, presents itself.
Hi, my name is Swain Tuft. I ride with Mitchelton Scott World Tour Team. I live in Andorra and been in Europe now for, quite some time. So 20 years ago, I was doing that stuff. And, you know, initially it was, I was really into mountain climbing and it was a means of traveling. How I even got into biking was just to get out to the mountains. And so I could do these climbs and cars at the time for, you know, the jobs that I had, I was just working odd jobs. It was just too expensive for insurance and gas and all that stuff. So, you know, I got into cycling in a very different way. And, doing those trips, it really caught my, I became really passionate just about cycling in general. And so it changed me from going into the mountains to now I just wanted to travel and live on the bike. And so I did that for quite a few years, 3 to 4 years, two times up to Alaska, down to Mexico. And a lot of trips within BC and the Rockies and the Sierra Nevadas. So, it was very different at that time because I had a big aluminum trailer and a crappy mountain bike and I had my dog always with me. So, you know, I wasn't, doing the high speed tours that I'm capable of now, but, it was the same idea and the same love that I had. And, it's funny now to be coming full circle 20 years later, getting to enjoy that same thing that I fell in love with cycling to start with. So, yeah, it's been a funny journey.
Originally, it was Calgary to Victoria, but then I have my own gravel event out in Port Renfrew, so that'd be kind of cool to tie that in. So Worlds never had anything to do with it. It was just like, all right, let's do this. And thankfully, I have some really amazing friends who are like, yeah, that let's do it. Like, we'll make it happen. All we have to do is, you know, figure out how and what bikepacking is, and we'll do that. So it'd be kind of like I put this rough plan of a road together and just thought this could be something really cool and something I kind of needed to do that wasn't, you know, TSS, you know, rated, like not look at my power meter for 10 days of like biking, which I can't even remember the last time I did that during the season was.
The training for cycling has become so specific that you're almost like a robot some days. And I think there's parts of you, like, you know, in the very highest level, there's parts of us that need to do that work. But I also think it's just not sustainable. And when you get the taste for the freedom on the road, when you go touring, it just opens your whole horizon to what's the possibilities. And it just changes your perspective on training because you also realize you get a massive workload, you're ticking off all the boxes, yet you're enjoying yourself so much more than just going up and doing 5-minute intervals on some climb and then groveling home.
Physically, I did a lot of prep before the bike packing. It wasn't like the bike packing came out of the blue and that was what built me up for the Worlds entirely. I think it was just this massive block of volume. And I've always responded well to medium intensity, but like really high volume. So we just kind of went with that. It was definitely a roll of the dice. But at the end of the day, it worked out really well. And, you know, looking at Innsbruck, it was going to be this just beast of a day, you know, 270k or something, like 4,000 meters of climb. I can't remember all the metrics now, but it was just this huge day. And So I'm like, well, might as well just do a bunch of huge days. So I think our average ride time for those 9 days was like 8.5 hours or something. Like every day average, some days were like 12 hours of pedaling. Some days were, you know, 7 hours. So yeah, it was, it seemed kind of like, no, not a bad idea at the time, but for sure up until, you know, us in the break on the day, I had no idea what to expect.
A lot of things have changed in with the technology of bikepacking, and it makes it really easy to get out there and enjoy, you know, massive K's, big days on the bike.
Anytime you speak with Swain, it's just sort of like you feel like you have the opportunity to speak with a legend. So you kind of like anything he says kind of has that effect. But you know, I just kind of like, because the idea came to me like literally like the day before the time trial. So I'm like, and I known Swain to have done a bit of this stuff, so I just, it's kind of cool. We're waiting for the podium. I'm like, hey, so you've done this bikepacking thing. What should I do here? Like, I didn't know what bags to get or, you know, how many days to start off or anything like this. I just sort of was rolling with it, which I think he's the kind of guy who would appreciate that too. And he kind of just told me that. He's like, oh, I like all the gear is good now. You have a blast.
I mean, he's a great example of like how like a workload like that can really pay off. And, you know, from what I understand, they had a really, really great trip and covered some awesome. I mean, I was pretty jealous when I was hearing the route going through the Kootenays. That's some of my favorite parts of the world.
I do like doing different things on my bike. I do love going off the beaten track. Anybody who's ever ridden with me before, for better or worse, knows that's very true. I like to, yeah, just not ride down the same road as everyone else. Even if it ends up breaking both my wheels and I have to get picked up on the side of the road, which has definitely happened. Jamie, the guy who did the whole thing with me, who's like, he used to race professionally as well over in the UK, and we've been friends forever. He'll tell you the same thing. We both had this sort of like anxious nervousness because we both left from different parts of Calgary. He's in the very far south. I'm kind of in the middle of downtown. So we had this 2 hours or so of riding by ourselves with all our gear on, and you're not really like hauling ass, you're just sort of like creeping along. Bike weighs a ton, and neither of us had done this before. Like, I did one practice ride, but other than that, like, this was it. Like, we were rolling out and we weren't coming back. Like, this would be one of the few times, well, the only time really I left Calgary and like wasn't riding back home at the end of the day. And it's like, all right, so I'm gonna do this bike packing thing from here to here. Could you give me like a top five of stuff so that I don't die?
You know, some of the things that are really important is just be ready for what, like, the craziest weather situation you can, because a lot of times we look at the weather forecast 5 or 6 days out and it looks good. But you know, when you're in the mountains or you're in different areas, things can turn south pretty quick. And I think it's really important to just have your clothing really sussed out and ready for anything, because boy, if you have to go 2-3 hours when the temperature drops and you get a ton of rain, that can make for a pretty rough tour.
I think it was the day after we went through the first major pass, like, which was day one. So we went over a pass. It was at 7,000 feet, I think, something like that. And the day after it snowed. So if that would have happened, it would have been like done right then. Like, we couldn't have ridden through. And we weren't going to, like, well, we probably tried to walk because we're stupid, but yeah, that would have been bad, but we dodged that by a day. We'd always just get hit. Like, the first couple of days, we'd just get hit by just a bit of rain. But it was usually, like, it wasn't that cold, so that was fine. Like, no worries. We almost got in trouble in Cranbrook. All but one hotel were completely full for the BC Senior Games. So that could have been bad. That was, like, a 12-hour day, and we finished at, like, 10:30 at night. So, and we were soaking wet and cold and shattered, so we didn't really want to have to set up a tent in a parking lot. The last day, I guess, was probably the closest, like, to crazy we had. riding the Sea to Sky Highway towards Vancouver at 8 a.m. That's like rush hour on a road that has a bunch of twists, and like you just feel like eventually someone's going to be texting, and that's going to be it for you. So we rode that pretty hard, and then when we got off the boat in Nanaimo, we spent the next like 5 hours riding in varying degrees of pouring rain. So the last day really made its mark on us for weather, but we were staying in the cottage that night, so it was all good.
You know, it's just so many things get thrown at you touring, and I like that aspect because a lot of the stuff we do training when you're just at home is you control your environment so much. Oh, if the weather's not good, you might go on the ergo and do this or that, and or you just wouldn't go out on a crappy day. But when you're touring, you just have to go and do it.
Oh, there's so much more out there to do than just riding and, you know, sticking to your 30-30s and your 20-minute thresholds and all this stuff. Like, yeah, your bike can take you to some absolutely amazing places that you never, ever thought you'd go. Some of these roads, like this road from Lytton to Lillooet in BC, it was just like, this was like the dream gravel road that I'd been wanting to find like the whole tour. It was just perfect, fairly smooth, fast, rolling up and down, incredible views, like only one like massive pack of dogs, but that was okay. You know, finished like with this mountain view at sunset. And this is stuff that happened like, well, that was amazing. And that was probably the single coolest road we did. We have 2,400 photos between the three of us. Your bike racing season is not going to fall apart because you go and explore some stuff.
Well, you know, that time of the year is always, it's always a tricky one because I always find personally the wheels are falling off just mentally. And I think my advice to Rob was that, or something that we discussed, we actually talked about this back at Canadian Nationals. And one of the biggest points I have is like, okay, physically, it might not be the best thing. Like if we're going to talk the sports science aspect, it might not be the best thing to go and do. But I think it's so important that at that time of the year, mentally, you're enjoying what you're doing, right? And sometimes it's hard to get that motivation to go and do these intensive blocks of training. And I think it's one of those things that if you love touring, you like bikepacking, you love the freedom and the what each day is just kind of like an exciting new adventure, then that's going to be way better in the long run. As far as like if you're looking at performance, just being happy and loving what you're doing and having a challenge each day is going to be way better than kind of like grinding it out at home, like dreading. And you're at a very hard part of the season. You're just hanging on to fumes, basically, of you know, what you have left. Usually September, October is a hard time to really keep the motivation high. So, yeah, I think it's one of those things. You do have to be cautious, but I always say the mental aspect is going to trump the physical aspect.
I felt almost refreshed, like by the end of it. Whereas if I would have done the same volume on a road bike training, I would have just been shattered.
Rob Britton is a professional cyclist from Regina. 2019 will be his fourth year on the U.S. Pro Team Rally Pro Cycling. Swain Tuft rode in the World Tour as part of the Australian Green Edge project for the past 7 years, and he will join Britton on Rally for the upcoming season. Dan, can you please set a timer? We are going to do our top fives in 5 minutes. That's two different top fives. I'm going to do Canadian top five moments in cycling for 2018, and you will do
world moments, but caveat,
what's that?
I reserved the right to include Canadians in my top five.
Oh, I'm intrigued. Okay, tell me when the timer's running and we'll begin.
Timer is a go.
Okay, give me one of your top fives.
All right, worlds.
Yep.
Valverde.
Oh,
okay, hate it or love it, obviously a lot of machinations around this man winning, but you can't deny the emotion that he felt after. And you look back on 2019, you're going to remember that he won.
Sound like a Eurosport thing. Real emotion.
Real emotion. But the guy has 6 world championship medals, including one in Hamilton, Ontario.
In 2003, I believe.
So it's not like he hasn't been consistent. He's been so close.
Uh-huh.
And because of everything around him, we're always going to remember this for 2019.
We're going to remember it all next year.
Yep.
Okay, that's right. Okay, I'm going to give you one of my top five. Okay. It's a Canadian one. Shelley Gauthier. She is a paracyclist from Toronto. She rides in T1. That's the trike category. She got her 14th world championship title this year, and she had a perfect World Cup season. That's winning all the time trials and all the road races. She has just got a phenomenal record. So
yeah, I read your top 10 in the this issue of Canadian Cycling Magazine. Shameless plug, no big deal. And it's pretty impressive what she's done. And I think she's even coaching some of the younger generation. I think I saw that. And that's cool. Giving back to the community. Perfect record. 2019 moment for
sure.
Okay,
yours.
All right. Stage 19. Mm-hmm. What am I talking about?
The Vuelta a España.
No.
Oh, sorry. The Giro d'Italia.
That's the one. Winner, winner. Froome attacks with 80K out. That epic solo escape. Takes 40 seconds on Dumoulin. Ultimately holds out.
You're taking your top fives.
Are my top fives a little spicy?
They're a bit. I think, you know, we're going to get letters.
Oui picante, if you will. That's Spanish, not Italian.
Thank you. Okay. You know, it was a performance that had everybody talking, had jaws dropping, had somebody making a comparison to Floyd Landis. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a performance.
That would be George Bennett. That's right. Lotto Jumbo. That's yellow Lotto. All right. We're going to remember that for 2019, regardless of what happens in the future.
Actually, that's a top five of 2018. Yes.
Okay. This is both a trainer moment for me and a moment in real life.
Oh my gosh.
Milan Sanremo. I watched almost 100-ish kilometers on the trainer.
I remember seeing your Strava thinking, what happened?
What happened that he did that?
Yeah.
I was watching Milan Sanremo. This is the ultimate slow boil. You can't get off because all the tension's being ramped up and ramped up and ramped up.
Stuck on your trainer.
They come off the Cipressa. They come down onto the Poggio. Mm-hmm. Nibali, epic attack. Then the peloton's within bike lengths of him as he crosses
the
line.
They're bearing down on him, yeah.
You know, Caleb Ewan comes in second. All it took was Nibali to falter for 5-10 seconds. Ewan nips him at the line.
That was a great performance. And I remember watching it going, Is this the time? Will it work? It's never worked before.
They're not going to let him yeah. get in with this.
It was great drama, for sure.
But, you know, this puts Nibali up in the ranks of the all-time greats. He's got Il Lombardia. He's got all three Grand Tours. He's got this monument as well. Top moment of 2019.
All right, I'm going to jump in with some of mine because you've been top fiving. So, Magali Rochette, she's had a great season in North America. She's in Europe right now, but in North America, she won the Pan Am Champs.
Yep.
And then she's once again the Canadian champ. She had just stellar performances here in Ontario.
Yes, sir. No argument.
And also sticking with Canucks, Corey Wallace. He, the marathon mountain biker, got his second straight solo 24-hour world championship. Also recently, he beat his 24-hour record or sub 24-hour record on the Annapurna circuit.
That's the one in Nepal.
That's right.
No, yeah, Corey Wallace. This guy definitely goes way too under the radar, but he's doing some pretty cool things in 2019.
Totally.
All right, keeping it on the mountain bike side, Kate Courtney, 23, first win on the elite circuit in the World Cups. And it was her world championship win. Took down Langved, took down Batty.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome moment on the dirt side of things.
That was totally cool. Also, that segues into my moment. A bunch of moments. Haley Smith. She was sixth in that race, but she was third in the Commonwealth Games. She got bronze there. She's had a phenomenal year. I think we're looking for a lot more stuff from Haley Smith in the next few years.
I'm sensing a theme that a lot of your top five moments went in this issue of the magazine.
Okay, so the current issue did help me with my thinking of top five of 2018. It's the December-January issue on Stands Now. So, you know, there's a bit of overlap. How much time we got?
2, 1.
Oh, no. We didn't do five.
You know what? I think this calls for overtime.
This calls for overtime. How many did I just do? I did one. Wait a minute. I think we both have one remaining.
Okay, I'm giving us a minute 30 of overtime.
A minute 30? We don't just get on with it. Stop playing with the phone.
Okay. 119 of overtime.
Just go.
Okay. Woodsy.
Woodsy? Ah.
Now, which Woodsy moment do you think I'm talking about?
Oh, see, because he's on my top five. See, my top five Woodsy moment is I'm going to say Michael Woods and his bronze medal at Worlds. I think Now, I wrote about, in the current issue of the magazine, I wrote about both of his big moments of this year. And I think Worlds is, one is more personal in a way. It's got a personal narrative that's just so strong. And the other, I think, speaks to Canadian cycling a bit more as a whole. Woods is third in Innsbruck. It had, there was a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes, especially Kevin Field of Cycling Canada, who I like to call Mr. Moneyball of Canadian cycling. There's so much going on.
I love the story about him and Duchesne working together to really nail that descent. Because I got to be honest, when I saw them going over the top with Bardet, with Valverde, I was like, all right, no way Woodsy's holding on to this. But looks like all that homework they did together with Duchesne just kind of drop him constantly on the descent obviously paid off. He knew that descent like the back of his hand.
Yeah, there was a lot of work, a lot of prep that went into that, and I think all that homework paid off on all sorts of levels. From it was a team effort, and Woods's result is it that's what the work produced. So I think that is at my top. That's the top moment for me.
Okay, so my Woods moment.
That was a Woods moment.
My Woods moment. Liège.
What?
No, not really. No, it's the Vuelta win.
That's what I thought you were going to say. No, Liège was good.
No. It was the Vuelta win. Yes. I think for me, ultimately getting it done on the World Tour is a big step for Woods.
Yeah.
Of course, the famous quote of do it for your family. Like, I'm literally getting chills right now just thinking of it, and the room's not that cold. Like, that's such an emotional moment. It resonates with people beyond being pro cycling fans. Like, it's such a...
Yeah, human touching.
Yeah, there's such a not a relatable moment, but it's everyone's been touched by tragedy, and to see him use that to achieve something he's always dreamed of was great.
Yeah, and that line was thought up by his director, Juan Margarate, and it was like, for me, what I liked about that story is it was such a... He knew Michael Woods's condition so well, his sort of psychology. He was able to use it in a meaningful way that helped Woods take that stage.
Yeah, that's and then you just had a string of second places and close calls, and to finally see him win, I think that just proves to him that he's at the level that he needs to win at the World Tour. And moving into the Ardennes Classics, I think that gives him a lot of confidence going into next year.
Yeah, that will be exciting to watch.
Okay, and here's the bad news.
What's that?
When I put it to a minute 30, I actually set it to an hour 30. So our overtime is going to be
very long,
right. Or we should just close this off.
There's our top fives of 2018. All right, we're looking forward to 2019. We're going to start a new segment on the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast called Ask a Coach. The coach taking our questions is Peter Glassford. He's a contributor to the magazine and the website. Peter coaches many riders who I've raced against in masters races, or at least I used to race against them, as they all seem to have moved up in categories throughout the past few years. I also love to watch Peter race cyclocross because he's sure to throw a wicked tail whip during competition. My question for Peter is how to navigate the holiday season in a way that doesn't set my fitness back too much when I get back to regular training in January. Let's hear what Peter has to say. Peter Glassford, welcome to the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast.
Excited to be here, Matt.
Right on. So you are our coach, and we are going to ask you questions. And well, here's my question for you. We are in the thick of the holiday season. I'm sort of struggling to get all the gifts on my list for people. I'm trying to wrap up work before, you know, everything shuts down. And but it's, you know, I don't want my fitness to totally tank over the holidays, where, you know, I'm going to have a turkey and some pie and all kinds of stuff. And I think this is something a lot of cyclists are going to be thinking about, either right now or in the next few days. What strategies might you have for, you know, not necessarily winning at Zwift or anything, but not returning after the holidays, being behind the eight ball in terms of physical fitness?
Yeah, it's a very common question and issue, right? We have this block of time, you know, and probably everyone's been in that situation for, you know, all of December. It's crazy with holiday parties and different things. It's just a hectic time of year. So what I'll usually have people doing is, you know, number one, talking to the family and just sort of, you know, these are my goals. You know, this is what I'd like to do. Where does this fit in? You know, what are my windows, right? That seems to be a common term that comes up with clients is I have this window to ride. And by that, I mean, you know, I have an hour to ride on these days. And so that can be helpful in itself. You'd be surprised how often just that step of talking to the family and working through what's available and what's, you know, reasonable, we could call it compromise, that often is a big thing. Mm-hmm. And then I think for cyclists, especially the ones who are really into the smart trainers and, you know, suffering and so forth indoors. I think this time of year is used to be, we used to call this like base one or, you know, general preparation. We used to be outside skiing and stuff like that. So I think, you know, do what, you know, your two trainer rides a week or whatever you can do during that week, whatever you have planned during that week. And then just get out, right? That could be, you know, my family plays a bit of road hockey or something like that. You know, go for walks with your family. A really nice thing I try and do personally is like I'll do my trainer ride and then we'll go walk to town or go, again, family walk or whatever right after. And so then you're getting sort of a element of endurance into that, right? You're continuing to move for an extended period. So that can be really helpful too, just sort of stacking stuff a little bit up. And then you mentioned your turkey and stuff. The one concept I don't really want to call it a diet, but the Worth It diet is something one of my friends actually came up with, and it was sort of just his general nutrition strategy, and he just asked himself if this was worth it. So I think on Thanksgiving, you know, there's like the white bun that's on every table, right? It's just like miscellaneous bun, you know, from the like, you know, discount, whatever, unless your family has really good like homemade buns, then that might be worth it. But there's that, there's the stuffing, there's, you know, desserts, there's wine, there's, you know, whatever. And it's, I think sometimes we just have to sort of step back and this could be a pre-plan, you know, the stuffing's going to be there and it's the best stuffing all year. Don't not have the stuffing if that's like a big thing for you, but you know, if you can pull out the white bun you don't even like, but someone's just passing to you, you know, those can be little wins that actually do add up fairly substantially.
I never thought of that because I don't know, maybe I was trained by my grandmother to, you know, just eat everything on my plate and my grandmother would quickly put everything on my plate. But yeah, to be a bit more selective about what you're putting there. And yeah, is it worth it? Do I really want this or am I just reaching for the bun because there's these dinner rolls on the table?
Yeah. And it's such an odd, you're right. There's a lot of different, you know, family-based, you know, norms or, you know, even there's things that we think we're expected to do. And it probably doesn't matter as much as you think it does that you finish your plate. Mm-hmm. But you're also at the point, you know, we're all at the point in our lives where, you know, it's not that big of a deal to just not have something, right? But again, you don't want to go through necessarily. A lot of us would really struggle if we were just like, I'm not having grandma's stuffing or that pumpkin pie. But just being a little bit more selective, right? Like, what is that thing for you? Like, I personally, I'd rather drink a bunch of scotch and, you know, away we go. So I don't generally have a lot in the way of desserts or stuffing or buns. And, you know, we can judge that one way or the other. But that's sort of my, oh, it's the holidays. I'll have, you know, that nice glass of scotch or whatever.
Yeah.
So to each their own.
Right. No, and it's not heavy planning, but it's something you can sort of plan in advance and just have that as a strategy. I just wanted to go back to that idea of like combining a ride with a walk. Is that a way to like get just sneak in endurance, or how does that work? Is it because you've just your body's still moving throughout the day?
Yeah, I mean, I like to. There's a couple things. Like, so my wife and I run a podcast called The Consummate Athlete, and so a big inspiration for that was just this idea of, you know, we could be more well-rounded athletes, and potentially for quote-unquote normal people, this would actually open up more work capacity because we're traveling for business, or, you know, we have to take our kids to baseball, or, you know, whatever, we're on a ski trip. There's all these barriers. There's weather in Canada. So to me, again, there is specificity. I'm not denying that that's important, but there is the reality that if I can do a 5K run, this is a very triathlete example, but after, you know, completing, say, a mountain bike race or a cyclocross race, I have the work capacity that I could continue and go for a run or go walk or go, you know, I always think about the kids at the races. You've probably seen them even at cyclocross races. They race their race, and then 10 minutes later, they have a hand, like they've just chugged a chocolate milk. And then they're dirt jumping and they're running around building jumps or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever they're doing. They're in the trials thing, doing tricks and stuff. And it's just that like never ending energy, right? That ability to keep moving. And that, yeah, for sure. It's, if you can go and walk for an hour after you do your trainer ride, that's just work capacity, right?
Right.
And I think there's some dietary things too. Like I think you could, you know, do different things with fueling around that as well to maybe augment that. But yeah, for sure.
How do you mean augment your fueling?
What I would do in that case, like it would depend on the workout that led into it. But I mean, if you didn't necessarily have that post-workout full meal, before you went for the walk in the same way that you would maybe, you know, if you were out on a 2-hour ride, you would only consume so much. I feel like then you're going to also be sort of like depleted, and then you're also walking. So that walking may actually feel a little harder. And again, you can get as kooky as you want with that. But I think, you know, you're continuing to walk. So again, you're working aerobically after maybe a harder trainer session or just maybe an easier trainer session.
Peter, these are some great tips. Thank you very much. I think they will definitely help me and our listeners as we get deeper and deeper into the holidays.
Awesome, Matt. Have a great holiday.
You too. Thanks. Bye. Peter Glassford is a professional coach and head of Smart Athlete Coaching Services. You can listen to more training advice on The Consummate Athlete, a podcast by Peter and his wife, Molly Herford. Send your Ask a Coach questions for Peter to podcast@cyclingmagazine.ca. In early October, Melanie Chambers, a regular contributor at Canadian Cycling Magazine, received an email saying she got an entry into the Taiwan KOM Challenge. It's a 105-kilometer race open to riders of various abilities, including pros. In 2018, Emma Pooley and Lawrence Tandam competed in the challenge. The route goes from close to sea level to 3,275 meters. One part in the last 10 kilometers has grades a little more than 27%. Melanie accepted the invitation. The added challenge for her, not that she needed one, was that the invite was last minute. The Toronto-based writer and rider only had about 3 weeks to get ready for the event. Here's the story of Melanie's Taiwan KOM challenge and her effort to make the 6.5-hour time cutoff to earn a finisher's medal.
It's the morning before the KOM. I'm here in my hotel room, getting ready for a light ride. It's going to be the hardest race I've ever done in my life with minimal training, and my goal is to just finish this thing. I've got 6.5 hours to ride 85 kilometers all uphill. Been surrounded by a bunch of amazing professional athletes who have done this before, giving me tips on how to just keep going. The second half is supposed to be a lot harder. The last 10K, in fact, is brutal. 27.3% grade in some sections. But I'm less nervous than when I first arrived. It was the unknown. We're here with a media group, and there's definitely two camps of people. There's the journalists that are riding, and then there's the professional athletes. So just being surrounded by like-minded people who are just as scared as I am about the pain. I guess that's what scares me the most, is just enduring the pain and mentally just forcing myself to get over it and finish. What's actually really inspirational for me is being around the professional athletes, people that have done this before. Haley Simmons is a British rider. who came in second last year, and she was telling me about her season this year. She fell on her elbow, had stitches, and then fell again and reopened it. She's got a metal pins and wire in her arm. Lucy Kenny, who is a contender for first place in the women's category. She had an accident this year. She broke her eye socket, her jaw. She had a concussion. She came back, she was feeling strong, and she had another accident, and it just set her back all over again. She said the second was mentally that much harder than the first. They're professional athletes. This is their life. This is their reason for being, and their dedication is very inspirational. If I can just absorb, rub a little bit of that on me as I'm going up the hill. The other part of it, of being here, I mean, I was just petrified before I came. I wasn't sleeping. I would wake up and my heart rate was just going through the roof. But what is really inspiring is hearing from people that know me, telling me that I was made to do this, telling me that just do what you love. And it is. I just love riding my bike and have fun. Just enjoy this. I lost my mom a year ago. And her death has made my life more vivid. Everything I'm doing lately, I think of soaking everything out of the moment of my life. And I just hear her all the time. She was just so proud of me. So I'm going to put a picture of her on my top tube as well. The other thing I'm going to put on my top tube is a quote that I send myself sometimes in an email when I'm feeling down. And the quote is, "You're fucking Melanie Chambers. Just remember who you are. Remember what you love, what you're doing." And a quote from my partner's mom, who's a huge fan. She said that I'm an inspiration to her. "You have the power, the empathy, the wisdom, and the common sense of a superwoman." Wow. that just gets me. And I just have to remind myself of that. This is all mental at this point. There's nothing more I can do physically just to get over this, the pain, to finish, and to think of the feeling after, because that's always the best. It's when you've finished and you've reached the top. I love that feeling. I just keep thinking of that as I'm going through the race. And another bit of advice from Annabelle Reines is to sing up the mountain. So I've got to think of a good song to get in my head. At the start line, we've got about half an hour to go. The waiting is killing me. It's a full moon. You can still see the moon. It's pretty sweet. And the mountains are absolutely crystal clear. I am so out of my league. I had to ask somebody how to put a chip on to my fork. He must have thought I was crazy. I just want to get started. Just, you can feel it in the air. People are just kind of in their own space, and lots of selfies. Okay, I'm 23 kilometers in. We just passed the warm-up section. I'm feeling good. I was talking to a guy that was, held my bike when I went to pee. So we chatted for a bit in the warm-up, and it's taken down the nerves. We're going through the Taroko Gorge. It's absolutely beautiful. I'm biking beside some awesome people. Hey! feel really good to be alive.
and I just keep looking at my mom. Fuck.
For the last 10.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, I'm just going through a tunnel right now. There's a lot of tunnels that cut through the mountains. And it's deceiving because it's 4.5% grade. I'm going about 20 clicks an hour. Feels good. I'm almost at the 40 kilometer mark, so conceivably halfway, but the suffering is going to start really soon. So I just have to think of right now, one pedal stroke at a time. Kilometer 42.5, it's starting to get serious. I made a mistake with the last one. We're not at half. Oh, yeah, I'm looking over into the gorge and it's winding up. My heart rate's starting to go up a bit more. Yeah, my legs definitely feeling, just gotta keep eating. Kilometer 55. Just past the first water station, stopped to refill. I got 50 kilometers left. I'm just under 3 hours. It's gonna be tight to get in. Under 6.5. Oh, my hamstrings got this weird tinge going on. But I'm feeling good. I can do this. Over and out. Okay, I am at 58 kilometers, 3 hours, 2.5% grade. I've got about 40 minutes shaved off that, so I got 4.5 hours. Okay. I'm in a tunnel at 64.5. 3.35. I've been on the bike 8% grade. Oh god, it's hurting. It's, yeah. Yeah. I just feel like I'm run over. Okay, this is where the mental kicks in. I am fucking Melanie Chambers. I am fucking Melanie Chambers. I can do this. Okay. 68.7. And time 3 hours 54 minutes. Going down a little bit. Catch my breath. Got a little surge of energy there a second ago. Feeling much better. I think it might have been just some gels, caffeine gels just sunk in. Fuck, it's beautiful. It's just, it's like Jurassic Park. It's right now just perfect temperature. You can feel it's getting cool. I'm about 10 kilometers from the 2000 meter mark. And yeah, and then from there, the hell begins. Woo! I'm sore. That little twinge in the side of my IT band is there. My shoulders. my traps. Just gotta relax. Okay, this is a nice little 3.4 humming along. All right, time to switch gears. All right, my legs are just lead. I'm at 92, just past a feeding station at Banana. The weather is just unbelievable. It's cool. Now we're up into a pine forest. You can smell the needles. Oh, it just changed. Oh, it smells so good. Oh. Yeah, this is what it's about. I feel really good. All right. I just finished the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. The last 15 kilometers, my legs were seizing up. I was walking. And I finished 2 minutes before the cutoff. I've been home a week. It's a week ago I was in Taiwan. Finished the race, and now I'm set back into normal life and had a little time to reflect on my experience, what it meant to finish 2 minutes under the cutoff. And I think really it's like having a secret that every time you think of, it makes you feel stronger and better. Something that you did that you hold inside you. I know that might sound kind of cheesy or airy-fairy, but that race meant a lot to me. Made me feel alive. Made me feel alive in a way that I want the next adventure, you know? It's only been a week and I'm thinking, oh, what next? What new challenge can I tackle? And that spills over into real life. You think, if I could do that on a bike for 6.5 hours with so little training, what else can I do? It just kind of makes you feel invincible, stronger. You feel special too when you tell people about it. They're just so amazed. And then you just feed off that amazement. And yeah, I'm not saving the planet by any means, but it's a personal victory, and it really just feels good.
Melanie Chambers is a regular contributor to Canadian Cycling Magazine, and she's based in Toronto. And there you have it, the last episode of 2018 of the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast. It was put together by Dan Walker, me, Matthew Piorro, Philippe Tremblay, and it was produced by Adam Killick.
Now, if you want more, check us out at cyclingmagazine.ca and subscribe to the magazine, or we're on Instagram at Canadian Cycling, we're on Twitter at Canadian Cycling as well, and on Facebook, it's Cycling Mag. We are on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and what I normally call Intune, but it's actually TuneIn.
That's right. So all of those Amazon podcast people, now you know where to find it.
All right. Now, we're going to be going back to full send, no send in the next year, so we want to hear your full send, no send ideas. Email the editor at podcast@cyclingmagazine.ca.
Also, if you want to ask a coach and have a question for Peter Glassford, you can send that into the same address, podcast@cyclingmagazine.ca.
Or be both in the same email.
Yeah.
We're not picky.
No, we can parse it. We'll read the whole email.
Now, what you can do to help is you can rate and review, but only if it's 5 stars, and
please say something nice.
Yes. Over the holidays, if you see Saint Nick creeping down your chimney, or a grumpy man in green, the Grinch.
Grinch.
Tell them to download and listen.
Yeah, yeah. Recommend our podcast, will you? Thanks. Merry ho-hos to that. And as always, we thank the Ontario Media Development Corporation for its support. Thanks for listening, and see you next year.